Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Lots to get through tonight. Luis Garcia will be joining us from Barcelona a little later to look ahead to El Clasico. Mark Ogden will be with us to talk about Manchester United's potential takeover. We'll be hearing from Christian Pulisic on the whole Berhalter-Reina family situation too. But we will start in the Europa League. Arsenal were knocked out on penalties by Sporting. A goal in the first half from Granit Xhaka. A brilliant goal from Pedro Gonzalez in the second half when he spotted Ramsdale off his line. Sent this match into extra time and penalties. And in the end, it was Sporting who advanced on penalties in this game through to the quarterfinals. Let's welcome in Frank Leboeuf as well, joining us right now. But I'll start with you, Craig.
I've no sympathy for Arsenal. They've made us watch extra time. We've started this show 50 minutes, maybe 40 minutes later than normal, which means it's going to be a late night, which means I'm grumpy, Shaka's grumpy.
But you love, you love the Europa League.
I did. I woke up this morning and I was buzzing for it, and that's done a 360. It's gone. Gone.
And so are Arsenal. Arsenal are gone right
now. They've only themselves to blame. They, over the 180 minutes plus, had a lot of control of this game. They lost control in the second half tonight. Sporting Club started well, and then Arsenal dominated. Just the shape, their passing. But something changed in the second half, and Sporting up to the tempo. Their keeper was making some saves, played excellently. Arsenal's passing got ragged. They've also lost a couple of players to injury. Positives and negatives. Negative, they're out. But that might be a positive. That's maybe how they spin it. Concentrate in the one competition now, Premier League. Gabriel Jesus got 45 minutes, needed some game time. But Saliba got injured and Tomiyasu got injured. And that could be a problem. So disappointing, but well done Sporting. I mean, they've got a good side, a good young manager, played some good stuff. And Arsenal did not kill them off and they're out.
Let's pick up on some of the positives, potential positives then.
See how I missed the positive tonight?
I saw it.
Europa League positivity.
Yeah, exactly. That's because you love this competition. Xhaka, can this be seen as glass half full in that the fact that they are going for the Premier League title?
Absolutely. I'm surprised that Arteta used as strong a team as he did in both the first leg and this one. And Craig mentioned it, Saliba out injured, we see how long that is. Tomiyasu yet, but he's less of a miss than Saliba is right now. And with a smaller squad than the likes of Manchester City, who they're competing with for the Premier League title, you understand that you don't want these midweek fixtures. You don't want to be playing an extra 30 minutes of extra time either. So you take that for what it is, because I still think Arsenal's season will be judged on whether they can hold on to the league at the top of the Premier League. And that is their only focus. I thought it should have been their only focus a couple of weeks ago.
And Frank, if Saliba's injury is serious, how much of a big miss will he be for this Arsenal team?
Big time. I think it could be a big blow. I mean, it was the central centre-back, you know, the best during the whole season. And he's been absolutely tremendous so far. And really, if he's not playing until the end of the season, or if he's injured maybe for a little while, it could be a problem, an issue. Even if Holding can do well, and Gabriel showed today that he can be also very good. Saliba is Saliba, and this season so far he's been the main player at the back. So we have to wait and see. And hopefully for him and for the Gunners, you know, he's going to be back very soon.
This competition was a good platform to give fringe players game time, to keep them fresh for the Premier League, if needed. You know, thinking about, we talked about it yesterday and over the last few weeks, Gabriel Jesus coming back, Smith Rowe, Tomiyasu, Jorginho, possibly, because Partey is going to be the starting player in there. Vieira, who I still think has got yet to shine, really. I thought he was pretty average tonight. And they paid quite a lot of money for him. Arteta's talked him up, but I haven't really seen a lot from him. And so now he's got all this, all the eggs in the Premier League basket, which is fine, but there's no avenue apart from getting a friendly organised or something to give, like, say, Gabriel or one or two others some more real match practice. It's in the Premier League or nothing. And so in some sense, the Europa League has been a good avenue in that sense. Although, as Shaq said, this was a strong side tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Stronger than he played in Lisbon. I mean, Matt Turner's been playing in goal and he's gone back to Ramsdale. Now, whether that was because it was the second leg and it was tight or because Matt Turner didn't have a particularly good game in Lisbon, which he didn't. But it's not easy for a goalkeeper just coming in now and again. But that was a strong side he put out. I was a little bit surprised it was as strong as it was. But he obviously wanted to go, clearly wanted to go through.
Another thing that kind of surprised me is how many minutes Saka is getting. I made the comment against Fulham. I thought he looked a little bit leggy. And then, again, plays just about the full game in this one. And you just wonder, for somebody as important to Arsenal as Bukayo Saka is, if this is a priority in any way. Now, obviously, they don't have to worry about the Europa League, but those decisions surprised me a little.
In some sense, I think you get the players in tomorrow, whatever it is, and it's like a team meeting. Not so much about the performance. It's kind of like,
yeah,
it's laid out in front of us. It is laid out in front of us. Our Premier League form is excellent. We've just come off the back of a brilliant 45 minutes stroke 90 against a very good team in Fulham. Not many teams have dispatched Fulham as easily as Arsenal. Let's just roll out from here. It's a big effort now to the end of the season. No more distractions. And we either succeed or we fail. So, in some sense, that is good. But it's this. I still think they could have handled both these competitions all the way to the end without any major dramas.
What did you make of Ramsdale on the equaliser?
From a goalkeeping perspective, a little bit embarrassing to be beaten from that far, but the more you look at it, the more it's an impressive strike. I don't think it could have gone in anywhere else. It just was that good a strike. When that happens, you hold your hands up. And the thing is, I think you see that, or the opportunity for that, more and more when you ask goalkeepers to play as the way Arteta's asking Ramsdale to play higher up, to support the defence. So when you give the ball away in midfield, those opportunities are there. Are there players good enough to take it with any regularity? Maybe not. But this time, I just thought the strike was exact.
Arsenal lost the ball in Porto's half.
Mm.
So the goalkeeper's always going to be quite high.
Quite high up.
I mean, you don't expect him to be stood in his six-yard box or even his penalty spot if you're in the opposing half. There was a slack ball back to Jorginho. Porto won it. It was an amazing piece of skill for Gonçalves. When you see where Ramsdale got to, he got his hand back to about that under the crossbar, which tells you where, and by the way, that's factual. I measured it. That tells you how precise this strike was. You know, I like to blame a goalie.
I do know, so I'm enjoying your defensive goalie.
Well, I just thought it was a brilliant piece of skill. In fact, it's in the monitor behind us, Shaq. Look, see?
Yep, that ball can't go in anywhere.
Perfect.
Else. And you just have to hold your hands up.
Right, are we done?
No, he's going to get you the honorary membership now for the goalkeeper.
A bit more than that.
A bit like the Europa League. It won't last.
Well, Arsenal are not going to last any longer in the Europa League. But how long can they last in the Premier League? They are slight favourites when it comes to winning the title. They're going to do it? Do you think they've still got it in them, Frank?
Well, yes. I don't think they're going to lose their mojo because they are out of the Europa League. As the guy said, you know, the main target is the Premier League, and they're going to be judged according to what they do and how they achieve the season. So I've no doubt that already tomorrow, because they're young, they're going to forget about that and think only about about the Premier League. And if they keep on doing what they have done so far, yeah, they have a big big chance, I think, to go until the end and finish first. I think they deserve. So far, they deserve. So, but they have to carry on working hard.
We've lost our mojo, haven't we?
We haven't. We're going to move
on. All right. I've lost mine.
Okay, so do you want to move on then? So we can save even more time in the show.
We'll Is that what we're doing? Yeah, come on.
All right, Manchester United are through to the quarterfinals of the Europa League. On the night, it finished 1-0 thanks to a great goal from Marcus Rashford. Obviously, on aggregate, they finished 5-1 in this clash against Real Betis. We're now going to welcome in Mark Ogden to talk more about this, but I will stay with you again, Craig. What stood out for you in this game?
Here.
You were ready to talk, so I'm going straight to you.
You love the Europa League.
Exactly.
You start off loving Europa League. Now it's all yours.
I watched the first half. You've taken it too far. I've watched the first half. It was chaotic. It was hectic. It was chaotic. In all fairness, Betis had a go. United were a little slack in possession. Vekos kept giving the ball away. They were trying to get Rashford over the top. And then when Rashford scored, I made a beeline here for the office because I've been deep in preparation for the Europa League. So, yeah, comfortable in the end. A few scares early on from United. The big crowd got behind Betis. But, yeah, in the end, a changed United side got the job done and it was comfortable over the two legs.
And what about Marcus Rashford, though, Mark Ogden? Scoring once again.
Yeah, he's the guy that's carrying United at the minute, isn't he? Because you look beyond Rashford. I think the next top scorer is Bruno Fernandes with 5. So, yeah, it's all on Rashford right now. I think Craig's right. It wasn't particularly great in the first half, like none of the United players, but it's a comfortable progression and they're still on for a treble of sorts, I guess. You know, it's not the proper treble, but it's a treble. So they've still got a chance of doing it. So Rashford is going to be a big part of that if they do.
Now, that is glass half full. Are you chucking the Premier League in there, Oggy?
Not FA Cup and Europa League. They've already won the AFL Cup.
Oh, yeah. That's the trouble. I thought you were chucking the Premier League in there, obviously.
No. Come on.
Frank, Marcus Rashford, what a season he's having.
A great one. Well, we are mostly talking about the after World Cup, I would say. He's showing to the world, you know, the strength that he had, the confidence that he had on his football. And you feel that, yeah, he went into trouble maybe the first half, but you feel that at a certain point he's going to show his talent and he's going to make the difference. And today, you know, how he shot the ball, it was like Ronaldo giving a free kick. And he knows because he's full of confidence that he's going to surprise the goalkeeper. I mean, he knows that he's going to score at some point. The guy is amazing right now.
Are they favourites for you to win it now, Manchester United, Shaka, especially because there could be a little vested interest from you? Maybe they'll take their eye off the top four race in the Premier League and Newcastle can swoop on in.
I'll settle for that quite happily. But in all honesty, yes, Manchester United are favourites, especially when you see this kind of performance today. Given the changes, how comfortable, it was far more comfortable than 1-0 suggested. Rashford had two opportunities that I'm not sure how he missed, given the form that he's in. So this could quite easily have been 3 or 4 to Manchester United. And you look at what's left, it's hard to see much further than Man U given their form. And the only question, again, as Mark was kind of alluding to, is if with all the competitions and all the games, it eventually starts catching up with them. No sign of that right now, so no real need for concern.
Do you agree?
Yeah. Got a winning mentality with this manager. They've been over the line in the Carabao Cup without playing great. They're going to lose Casemiro for a bit. He's got a bit of a hefty suspension coming up. The top four shouldn't be a major drama for them, I don't think. It might be a little tight, but it shouldn't be a major drama. I think they're more than good enough to get in. And yeah, they're going to be a hard nut to crack in this competition for sure, as they are in the FA Cup. Of course, Man City are still in there as well, but yeah, you know, absolutely, this competition, the way they're playing, they can make changes. Definitely favourites for me, for sure.
And in the meantime, Mark, they are navigating a potential takeover at Manchester United. What's the latest there?
Yeah, so we've got to the point now where the successful bidders from the first stage, in terms of having their bids accepted as being, and able to go to the next stage, have been to Old Trafford and to Carrington, the training ground. this week. I think Sheikh Jassim the Qatari bidder was there today. I think Jim Ratcliffe is going to be there. Or Sheikh Jassim's people were there today. Jim Ratcliffe will be there tomorrow to assess the situation. What it basically means is it's like, so far these bidders have looked at the dream house and they've seen the glossy brochure, but now they get a real look at what they're going to buy. If they're going to buy it, they go to Old Trafford and see that actually the roof's leaking, that it needs a bit of upgrade in terms of internally, that you know the stands aren't what they used to be. It basically, it's a case of, is it going to take £200 million to upgrade Old Trafford, or is it going to be £1 billion investment in a new stadium? So if you're going to invest £4, 5, 6 billion in buying the club, you need to know what it amounts to. So that's been part of the process today. And then you've got another situation where they might increase the bids, perhaps, if they see like what they see. But the ultimate situation is that, if you look at it, it's like the best house in town. It used to be. It's all fading. And the guys next door had a lottery win about 5 or 6 years ago, and they've made it really nice. It's a big problem for United in the sense that Old Trafford and the training ground need a lot of work, and it could impact what the Glazers value the club at. So I do think that Jim Ratcliffe and the Qatari bid will carry on to the next stage. I don't think it will discourage them from buying United, but it might affect what they want to bid for, because there's a lot of money to be spent off the pitch as well as on the pitch.
Do the fans have a preference on who the new owner will be, Mark?
It's split, to be honest, Kay. I think a lot of the fans, the majority of fans, would like the Qataris to buy the club because they feel that is one that will bring the investment. But there are a group of fans maybe who've got more morals, I guess, than others that don't want the club to be owned by the Qataris in terms of, you know, a state-owned football club, and they want a local guy, Jim Ratcliffe, a homegrown Man United fan who's made himself the richest man in Britain. That's the ideal for many United fans. But I think ultimately that the majority want the Qatari bid because it will bring more money, more investment into the club. But, you know, ultimately with the Glazers, and the Glazers might not sell yet. We keep saying that they're going to sell, but I keep getting told that Joel and Abraham are quite keen to stay in the third party in this bidding process, the Elliott management, the hedge fund. They're prepared to bankroll the Glazers and keep them in place. So that could be the third part that nobody's really considering, that the Glazers stay with new investment from the outside, which would be pretty toxic for a lot of the fans, because the fans want them out and they've wanted them out for 17 years.
Here's a look at some of the other Europa League results and the teams who will be advancing to the quarterfinals. So a look at who Manchester United could be facing in the next round, the likes of Juventus, Sevilla, Bayer Leverkusen, Roma and Sporting.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Some of the reaction to the conclusion to Real Madrid and Liverpool's latest meeting. Marca saying the Champions League bosses. Diario AS saying champions for a reason. Let's just say the press was a lot more negative when it comes to the Liverpool side of things. Basically saying they're going out on a whimper.
And even more bad news for Liverpool is the fact that Stefan Bajcetic is out for the season with a thigh injury. He posted this on Instagram saying, "Unfortunately, I've picked up an injury that will keep me out until the end of the season. It's very sad to say goodbye to this amazing season for me, but I understand this is part of football and will only make me stronger physically and mentally. I would also like to say thank you to you Reds for all the support through the season, and I assure you I'll do my best to be back stronger than ever." Let's welcome in Luis Garcia to talk more about this. Mark Ogden's still with us as well. Luis, let me start with you then, because there's already many a question about Liverpool's midfield. This is just another blow, losing Bajcetic, surely.
Hello, how are you guys? From here, from Barcelona, beautiful Barcelona, a little bit freezing. Talking about, once again, Liverpool midfield. And it's been a lot of concern about what is going to happen to the Liverpool side coming on for the rest of the season, what is going to happen out of the Champions League, in a difficult situation, trying to reach that position on the top four. And with midfield, with a lack of intensity, we could see that happening against Real Madrid. A lot of people talking about if there is aging coming to the players into the midfield. We are talking about Henderson, Fabinho, Thiago, the players who normally are regularly played in the midfield of the park. But I have to say that, of course, there is a concern. I read today Virgil van Dijk talking about that they need more players, they need to sign more players. And, of course, the midfield is going to be one of those places where everybody at the club are going to be trying to find the right players. But I see youth in the middle of the park. I've seen Harvey Elliott being important. I remember Curtis Jones being important, not this season probably. You got Carvalho, you got Stefan, that is going to be out of the season from now on. But definitely you got players right there. But are those the players who you want to be performing at the highest level for 60 games a season? Probably you're going to need a little bit more. And I think and agree that Liverpool needs a little bit of experience in the middle of the field, that they need players who kind of help the team to improve that intensity, the way that manager Jurgen Klopp wants to play. And at the moment, because of the situation of the whole team, is not ready to face probably a Champions League spot in the quarterfinals, or we'll see if they can manage to get in the top four.
Going back to the papers, why was Marca so cock-a-hoop about beating Liverpool?
I don't know. It was Madrid-based paper, usually very pro-Real
Madrid. What's special about beating Liverpool this year? They do realise Bournemouth beat them at the weekend. They realise most people in England...
There is a real prestige around Liverpool Football Club in Spain. There just has been historically for years.
They're playing Liverpool at their worst for quite a few years. So, it's like, have they looked at the league table in Madrid, seeing where they are?
Let me jump in on you, because yesterday you said Jude Bellingham probably wouldn't choose to go to this side right now either, because he's obviously seeing everything that's happened in there. After watching that game, who do you think needs to make way for new players to come in?
At Liverpool?
Yes.
Well, you know, you can't keep relying on somebody like James Milner, who's played something like 700 games plus. You can't keep relying on him. You can't keep relying on a Jordan Henderson. I think they need somebody almost like what Naby Keita was supposed to be, a dynamic, does a bit of everything in the middle of the park. Fabinho is obviously more of the setting player. He's not had a great season, but we know he's a good player, very good player. Whether he can resurrect his Liverpool career next year, I don't know. I agree with Luis. Harvey Elliott's a terrific young player and will only get better. But I do think they need somebody... I mean, Bellingham does a bit of everything. I think that is what they need. They need somebody that's prepared to help a Fabinho and prepared to help the strikers as well. Almost like what a midfielder used to be before everybody had a sort of designated role. Oh, attacking midfield, defensive. A lot of clubs now have players that can do a bit of everything in there, and I think Liverpool need that. I also think they need to look at the right-back position, as good as Trent Alexander-Arnold is. The defensive side of the game is not redundant, and Liverpool have really felt that this year, that when they've been under pressure, more pressure than normal, they've had to rely on the defence, and that's been left wanting. So that area is not redundant because you're very good going forward. So there are at least two or three positions. Don't forget they've got Diaz to come back as well. So the front line when everybody's back could be okay if it fires on all cylinders. It's the middle of the park and one or two spots in the defence, I think, that are key for them.
So what is their plan, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, the plan obviously is revolved around Bellingham for a long time. And I wouldn't rule out Bellingham to Liverpool. You know, I think when he went to Dortmund, it surprised a lot of people that he went there ahead of Man United. But with Bellingham, I don't think it's a money move. I think it's about a career move and a progression move. And I think it seems to be that the two clubs that are most likely to sign are Liverpool and Real Madrid. Now, you go to Real Madrid, you know, great move, obviously, for a player of any age. But they've got, you know, Camavinga was fantastic last night. Modric isn't going anywhere. I mean, he's still outstanding. You've got Toni Kroos the same. You've got Tchouameni's there as well. If Bellingham goes to Real Madrid, he'll play. But will he play every week? Maybe not. If you go to Liverpool, the team pretty much is built around you. So the only thing I'd say about that is that he probably needs more than one midfielder to solve the problem. Because you look at Milner, you look at Henderson, you look at Thiago. You know, all these players are not getting any younger. And I'm not sure that Liverpool can get much more out of them. So I think Bellingham is the plan. But I think I agree with Craig in the sense that Alexander-Arnold is becoming a bigger and bigger problem. I was there last night in the Bernabeu, and he just leaves so many gaps on the right-hand side. And the right-hand side of the pitch is becoming a massive problem for Liverpool now, because he simply can't defend. And, you know, every time Real are targeting that side of the pitch, and he seems to have lost a bit of appetite, a bit of hunger. But let's not forget, he's won everything there is to win. He's only young, but he's won everything. He's won the Champions League, the Premier League. You just wonder whether Alexander-Arnold needs to have a bit of a reset. He definitely needs some competition at right-back. So if Liverpool can find a right-back to, you know, get him back to his best and make him sharpen his defensive side of his game, if they bring Bellingham in, and I do think they've got a chance, even if they're in the Europa League, then the rest of the team, you know, up front they've got six, seven great options. I don't think Liverpool are far away, but they obviously need to address some key areas. You know, they've got a great goalkeeper. You know, Van Dijk, when he's on his form, he's one of the best in the world. I think they've got a situation with Gomez who's not top level, but, you know, they have got other options there. So Canate, when he's on form, isn't bad either. So I think Liverpool aren't far away, but they have to get that midfield sorted this summer.
What's more important, Luis, that right-back position or the midfield?
Well, I guess if you can focus on one of the positions, probably in the middle of the field, you got a lot of options. You will like more one or others, but you got players who can. At the moment, everything it looks bad because Liverpool just went out of the Champions League, because the situation in the Premier League is with ups and downs. So at the end, the momentum, when a team is in a great moment, everybody is with confidence. When it's full of confidence and the rhythm is okay, the intensity is okay, everybody, you can see the strength of the team. And the moments in the bad situation is where the weaknesses are exposed. And at the moment, we've seen that we all knew about Alexander-Arnold problems in defence, but we also understand that from that position he can add something extra to the attack. Those fantastic passes to Salah that we saw yesterday, those change of switch of play, those crosses, they are coming from a place where normally you wouldn't have. That's something that, of course, I guess that the Jurgen Klopp understand that Arnold is giving an extra. But when a team is not full of confidence and you need to change the situation, Liverpool is going to face teams that 80% of the times Liverpool is going to be dominant. It's going to have the attacking situation more often. But in the other 20%, you need to adapt the situation. You need to adapt your team to what you're going to feel in front. And I think yesterday, Alexander-Arnold was exposed against one of the best players in the world at the moment, that is Vinicius Junior. He was held by Konate in many situations, but again, he was exposed in that defensive role. So I'm not sure if that is going to be a key place, but definitely something that Liverpool needs to think about in the coming months, because you can see that there is something missing in that situation.
What's their current ceiling right now as they're constructed, this Liverpool side, Craig?
What do you mean?
Like, is there a fear that if you've seen Chelsea have got money coming in, obviously they've got some things to work out. Manchester City and Arsenal and Barcelona are out for the title right now. Is there a fear that if they don't fix things, they'll just become one of the best of the rest rather than title chasers?
Well, there is always that fear. I mean, you've got to hope that, you know, the likes of Van Dijk, even Alisson to an extent, has been making more errors, particularly with his feet, than before. You have to think these players that have been under par by their recent standards are going to, hopefully from their point of view, have a good summer, good pre-season, and get back to the best. If that's the case, they will get closer again to the teams at the top. But I still think if they don't plug those holes in the middle of the park, and listen, they have had success with Alexander-Arnold, of course they have, and he just seems like a guy we keep talking about. And it's not because most of us don't like him as a player, it's because he gets himself in defensive positions that beggar belief, basically. Beggar belief. And you might get away with that now and again, and I think that's a huge reason why there was a lot of talk about the World Cup for him and about his inclusion with Southgate in England. And he didn't get any game time, or much game time, it's not a surprise. So I think Jurgen Klopp knows if they don't spend money, it'll be difficult. Because you're sitting still, basically. You're sitting still and everybody else is moving forward. But they've got so many good variables. The boys mentioned the front line, lots of options. They've still got, he's had not a good season, but they've still got a great manager. They've still got some very, very good players. They don't need six players, but they need two, maybe three really important additions in the summer to go with what they've got.
I think the challenge with that, and yes, it's easy to say Jurgen Klopp needs to spend money, because of course they do, but then you are looking at, if Arsenal win the league, what kind of money do they start to spend? We see it, Chelsea already spending rather ridiculously, regardless of what that may look like. City will spend, they're under investigation, but hold your breath to see which way that goes. Newcastle have new ownership, they may spend heavily, we wait to see about that. And then you've got this Fenway Sports Group who are looking for buyers. And what is their willingness to spend and spend heavy if Liverpool finish outside the top four? And if that happens and all of a sudden they decide that, well, we're not going to spend, we prefer to look for buyers before splashing major cash like everybody else, You do start to regress rather significantly.
Who has the highest ceiling over the next few years, Liverpool or Newcastle?
I still think it's Liverpool. Liverpool are still a bigger draw. That is in risk, though. I think Newcastle will only get better from where they are now. The challenge for Liverpool is they don't want to regress much further because the likes of Newcastle go past them quite easily.
And with progression in the Champions League now sealed, Real Madrid turn their attention to the big one this weekend. It's the Clásico at the Camp Nou against Barcelona. You can catch all the coverage with us at Sunday 3 Eastern right here on ESPN+.
Just simply, how good is Vinicius Junior?
He's got wonderful balance. He takes players on.
Vini, Colosso!
Vinicius Junior does the dance.
I think the kid is a superstar.
Vinny Junior having quite the season. 40 games played in all competitions, 19 goals in those games and 10 assists. Well, here's what Ronald Araujo had to say about him when he was spoken to at Barcelona's media day.
In my opinion, right now, Vinny Jr. is the number one player in that position in 1v1 situations. He's a very good player, such a balanced player, and obviously it's difficult to play against him. But I've been working hard so that I can be at my best too, and I'm glad that things have been going well for us in that regard.
Luis, high praise from Araujo. What makes Vinny Jr. so special?
His ability, his power, his speed, his boldness. He's a player who is running and threatening you during 90 minutes. There is no 1 second where he is not a threat. Every single time that he's on the ball, you have to have an eye on him, two players to try to stop him. When he's not on the ball, you have to have a play also with an eye on him, because those diagonals, those moves that he does, they are so dangerous. So at the end, a player who is every single time on the ball trying to beat you on 1v1, that's something that you don't see very often, and much more because you know that probably 90% of the times he's going to do it. Because again, he's very powerful, very quick, very skillful, and something that on these days you don't find very often. So he has become one of the most important players, not only for Real Madrid, but in the world. And every single time that he's facing and trying to look for being a threat, it's always a victory. He's getting victory. So for me, at the moment, I'm not saying that he's probably one of the best players in the world at the moment because of that, what he can give you to your team.
Carlo Ancelotti said after the game, obviously he's his manager, he said he's the best in the world right now. Of the active players in the world right now, where does he rank among the best? Vinny Jr.
Well, off the top of my head, that, I don't know, he's got to be in the top five. But interestingly enough, it was nice words from Araujo, and it's quite clever. The last two Clásicos, Copa del Rey and Super Cup, Xavi's been quite clever, and he switched Koundé and Araujo. Araujo's played right back and has not given Vinicius Jr. a kick, basically. And he's kept him quieter than I think any other player in La Liga. And that we could probably and possibly see that happen again at the weekend, fitness depending. So Araujo has played him great, and Vinicius Jr. has to find a way, whether it's changing flanks or whether it's coming into the middle a little bit and asking a question whether the right back is going to follow him. Whatever it is, he has to find something to get more out of this Clásico at the weekend than he has out of the last two, because that fella there has played him absolutely brilliantly. He's big, he's strong. He can get tight to Vinicius Jr. because he's very quick as well. So he's not worried about him spinning in behind because he knows he's got the pace. And it's going to be intriguing at the weekend to see, A, if Xavi does the same thing again, and B, if Real Madrid try to counter that.
And is that what you hope for, Xhaka, as a goalkeeper, that your defender deals with him before he gets to you?
Yeah, because one-on-one, he's lethal. He is good. And as a keeper, it's always difficult to play against players who run at you with that kind of pace, because it's tough to judge exactly where they're going to meet the ball, which foot they're going to go with. So you hope that your defense takes care of that. And as much praise as we've heaped on Vinicius Jr., I still think he was better last season. And that's a concern. I still think he's growing into who he is as a player. As good as he is, I think he gets better once he starts recognising that consistency that I think is needed.
Well, we'll be hearing more from Luis tomorrow. We're going to let him get some rest over there in Barcelona. There
it's
is
cold.
A big
he said it's
weekend
cold.
Ahead. It's cold, but we will be hearing from him on tomorrow's show. Thanks so much for being with us, Luis Garcia. Don't forget to join us tomorrow and every single day. ESPN FC is available daily right here on ESPN Plus.
Yep, that'll be a day of Europa League highlights and conference.
And if you are in LA, make sure to go to Tom's Bar for a watch party with El Clasico and a chance to meet Hugo Sanchez as well, because he will be there. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Two CONCACAF Nations League games coming up for the US men's national team to close out Group D. A look at the roster called up for those matches. 13 members of the World Cup squad have been named, including Christian Pulisic and Gio Reyna. Tyler Adams is out through injury, along with a few others right now. But let's hear from Christian Pulisic, because he spoke this week to ESPN about the controversy surrounding Greg Berhalter and the Reyna family.
I'm not here to appoint the next manager. It's not my job. Whoever it is, I'm going to play and give 100%, and that's what I'm going to do. But in my opinion, it's everything that happened with Greg. First of all, is I think handled in an extremely childish manner. I think we all have seen what's been going on. I think it's childish. It's youth soccer. You know, people complaining about playing time. I don't want to go too far into that, but that's what we'll say. I think Greg has been extremely unfortunate in the position to get even into the position he is now. Do I feel like we should just wait and wait and you know, I don't think it's necessary because I don't feel we're in a phase like we were after not qualifying 4 years ago or however many years ago for the last World Cup, where we need a complete rebuild. We don't need some, you know, a bunch of new guys coming in and this. We have a strong core, in my opinion, and I think a lot of people have seen that, and we need to carry on with that. And that's why it's a tough one for me, because I think we could just want to continue that as soon as we can and build off of this World Cup, this, you know, World Cup, which I think had a lot of positives in it, I will say. And I think we want to get going with that as soon as we can.
Craig, would you hope that when your teammates asked about a situation like this, he just wouldn't highlight it at all or just say it's not really my place to talk about this when it comes to the Reina situation?
Well, it is his place in a sense because he was part of that squad and it was a very important competition. People may have noticed it was a World Cup. It was interesting, he went on about childishness and youth soccer and then said, I don't want to say too much about it, but that's what I will say. And basically what he's saying is, we don't need any big babies coming along here and when things don't go the way, they go crawling away to their mum or dad or whatever and they cause a problem. Right? We don't need that. We had it and we don't need it. Not everybody can play. We've all played in national squads where there's been really good players and I played in the national team for almost 10 years and players turned up that were playing regularly in the Premier League for good clubs and were experienced and sat on the bench almost every time they came. Unless it was a friendly, they got some game time and they got on with it because they were professional, because they were part of the squad. And I think what he's saying to sort of top and tail this whole shambles and circus that has been US soccer and this Reina situation is that Pulisic is saying, listen, we just want... Listen, we can do without superstars if they're going to come along here and whinge about the training ground and the game time and all this. If players turn up and get on with it, I think they'll be accepted back in. But I think in a roundabout way, what he's saying is, I don't think as a senior player we should accept this scenario in the dressing room again. They've got enough to deal with the management and the structure of US soccer, never mind whining players in game time. So I thought it was quite interesting that clearly there is still some angst there from Pulisic in terms of how it affected the squad internally.
I think there's a really big picture to this, which Christian Pulisic started to address. You're talking about a team that didn't qualify for the 2018 World Cup. They were harshly criticised for that. A lot was made, and rightly so in my opinion, of how they approached that game in Trinidad and Tobago and them being almost positioning themselves as kind of prima donna superstars in the end, end up looking more like big babies. 4 years on, you try to put that behind you. You try to put that experience behind you and show that you're building a program that competes in the way that everybody in U.S. soccer hopes it does, not just dominating in CONCACAF, but seeing itself rise in terms of world recognition. And on the back of that, that's your takeaway from the 2022 World Cup. Mother and father discussing private situations with the head coach, he losing his job as a result, they're not happy with the playing time of their son coming, coach making statements, son making statements. I mean, it just became, in the end, it became a bigger joke than not qualifying for 2018. And if this is the foundation or this is the starting point for you putting together a program that is supposed to match the European shoulder to shoulder, I'm not sure you could have done a worse job.
Right now, Thierry Henry has actually been linked with the US men's national team managerial role.
There's
a report about that. You can check that out over on our website. And they'll no doubt be talking about this on the latest edition of Football America's. Be sure to always stay up to date with Seven Herc on Football America.
Why don't we talk about it? It's a disaster.
Well, would you look at that?
West Ham 6-0 against advancing to the quarterfinals. I wonder if Xhaka has found a way to shoehorn his former club into his power rankings today.
Tell you what, it's been well worth the wait today for that, isn't it?
There's no way I could have shoehorned West Ham in. No, this is...
Okay.
I did shoehorn Sporting, though. I mean, fourth in Portugal, but I had to show him some love for beating Arsenal. Arsenal drop as a result, but top of the Premier League, so they get a whole lot of love for that. Other than that, it's just a little bit of a reshuffle.
What have PSG done to be new in this?
Well, in all honesty, Atletico were in last week because they beat Sevilla 6, and then they just reverted.
Sevilla are hopeless on the ball.
And they just reverted to tie with a boring 1-0 win on the weekend. Roma are up and down, so they had to be out. So PSG are there almost by default, almost because nobody else is.
Are people still getting mad at you about this rankings?
Well, Frank.
Just Frank?
It's only Frank. But okay. If PSG are in, Frank's not.
Are you mad, Frank?
PSG are in, so he's all right.
Are you mad?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't be mad about any decision from Xhaka. I know Xhaka tries his best. And sometimes he has bad days, you know, like every human being. He's not a robot. So, you know, I want to understand, you know, why PSG is ninth. I tried to. I didn't get it. But if Xhaka decides to put PSG number 9, you know, I will accept that, you know. And maybe we'll have the real reason why, maybe one day. No, I'm fine. I'm fine with the power ranking. I'm always fine with Xhaka. Xhaka has always a nice reason to put some team losing and being out of the Champions League, being in the top 10.
People don't realise how intense this process is.
Right up to a deadline tonight.
He was sat there on his phone and I said, what are you doing? Because he's normally up to something on the phone.
Like what?
No, I'm just, it's a very generic statement.
Carry on. I want to see where this is going.
I had a little glance over and there was a list of teams. And I said to him, what are you doing? He went, this is going down to the wire as the penalties. That's how important the penalty kicks were.
A lot of data goes into the power rankings.
And I said, well, been here, I said to him, because I knew it was important, I said, get that sent, because it'll take them a while to build the graphic.
I'm surprised he let you look over his shoulder.
Well, he caught me late. He caught me late and tried to show him again.
Oh, dear. He's
often right. On his phone here. He has caught him again tonight.
Well, you have to go a little bit longer. These guys will be available on Extra Time.
That'll be a short
evening.
One.
You can catch that over on our YouTube page where the panel answer your questions every night. And stay late, very late tonight to do so.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Well, that will do it for the latest edition of ESPN FC. We're not going out anywhere just yet because we're going to be doing Extra Time for you guys answering your questions. Frank's joining us too. Stick around. If I send you for the questions, will you run out the door?
Nope.
We've had to stay late tonight because of the Arsenal Sporting game. Extra time and penalties.
This backside is not moving from this chair until it's time to go, which in my reckoning is about 2.5 minutes.
So it might be the shortest extra time you've ever
imagine
seen
keeping
tonight.
Frank up in France. And it's what's now in France gone 1 o'clock.
Frank Leboeuf is with us as well.
Nearly one. Clocks have changed. Five off.
Yeah, so we're a little bit closer. We go
clocks
ahead
have
first.
Changed, yeah.
All right, we're going to wait for the first question to come up for this edition of Extra Time. It's been
just
a day.
Question.
All right, for Craig.
Why did we do that?
So how was it to do Europa League special? That Sporting equaliser was a beauty for any special. So you are a fan of the competition now?
A big fan, yeah. Always been a big fan.
So we nearly lost them though. We nearly lost them with the extra time. He's a fan of 90 minutes.
I wouldn't go that far.
Pinocchio.
Well, my nose is big enough, Frank, as you know. As my dad said to me, you were at the back of the queue. You were at the back of the queue when they were handing out noses.
I can't say much on
That's why I never grow a moustache, you know, because I don't want to underline it.
Did you ever?
What, underline it?
No. Did you ever grow a moustache?
Oh, no. Rud Hullett used to have one, and he had a big nose.
I think you lot should all get involved in that November and do it.
No.
Actually, the Europa League, I was all excited for it, as those people that watched yesterday's show. I was amped up. Amped up I was. Whilst I was sat amongst elitists. And one of the elitists, the presenter, who I think is having some sort of procedure.
I really want to know where you're going with this.
No, no.
Carry on.
He texts me, laughy, smiley faces. Ha ha, extra time and pens. Done.
Yeah. Craig,
yeah.
Tell me the truth. You saw in the Champions League, you saw Porto against Inter.
No,
in Champions
League.
That was a horrendous.
Yeah, that was a bad game.
I was tasked with watching the other game.
That was a bad game. Comparing to today, Arsenal Sporting, that was a great game today. That was a great game of football, intensity and everything. Yeah, that was Europa League, but I think it's fair to say that that was a better game than Porto Inter.
Listen, for 10 years, I've championed my boss to get me in on Thursdays. It's fallen on deaf ears for 10 years. Please let me come in Thursday to do Europa League. Please let me come in Thursday. I'm the man for Thursdays. And finally, I've cracked the code. And I'm now the Europa League man.
That's the biggest lie I've ever heard. Frank, are you wearing shorts?
Wearing shorts, yeah.
Oh, Dan would be so proud. Dan would be so proud of you, Frank.
Yes, he would.
But I'm a trunk man today.
I'm staying out of it. Staying out of it.
A what man?
A trunk man.
A trunk man.
Just don't start telling us about what your teammates wore under the shorts like last time, Frank. OK, Shaka, if you could move the ESPN offices to any city in the world for 1 year, where would you go?
Port of Spain. Go straight back to Trinidad and Tobago.
That means we're all there as well.
I'm totally fine with that. I'd have that in a heartbeat. All right. Trinidad and Tobago aside, I'll even rule out, I'll say Caribbean aside, if I can move it to one city. I like D.C., you know. If I could live anywhere in the U.S., I'd live in D.C. I'm going to go with D.C.
As lovely as it is, I think we'd all take the Caribbean, right?
Yeah, but... Wow. I absolutely take the Caribbean, but I am very biased, I admit that. So I say...
D.C.
I like D.C. I like D.C.
It's a bit humid down there, isn't it?
It does.
It gets cold in the winter as well.
Not as cold as up here. It's humid in summers. I love D.C.
Where would you pick?
I don't know. Where would I pick, Shaq? Because I'm very cultural. I need somewhere where I could, you know, get the culture.
Barcelona's got very...
No, I mean, it's set in America.
In the States?
I haven't got my passport yet. Can't be... Still trying. Got to wait a bit longer.
Let's go to the West Coast. Let's go to the West Coast.
No, she won't move to LA.
What about Miami?
No, Philip Duris.
All right, next question goes to Frank. Where would you go if you're Jude Bellingham, if Liverpool get top four and if they don't?
If they don't, I wouldn't go to Liverpool. I think I would try to find another club where I can play the Champions League, and it's only fair because even if I'm young, I'm Jude Bellingham, I've got so many talents, and we talked about during the show the fact that maybe they won't have the money also to pay my transfer fee, to pay my salary and everything, so I have to think about something else. If they are in the top four, according to who they're going to buy on top of me, yeah, I might say yes, but I want to see what is in Klopp's mind and the board's mind before signing for Liverpool. As we said, they need to change some, to reinforce, you know, maybe the middle of the park with myself, Jude Bellingham, and some others, and maybe on the right side defensively. So let's see how it works. It's a possibility, but it definitely cannot be the only possibility.
I know this has to be short tonight.
Okay.
According to us. It came across me. As Frank was talking, I had a moment. And it's the best place. San Diego.
Ah, nice.
I said West Coast,
and you said to what move?
When you said West Coast, I was like, LA. No. San Diego. Yeah?
So West Coast.
Yeah, I know, but I was thinking...
I'm just making sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, okay.
Down the West Coast, San Diego.
Stay classy, San Diego. All right.
Yes, San Diego.
I was hoping this question would be in tonight when I saw the replies, and it is.
Has there been replies to it?
No, when I saw the replies to me putting out, are there any questions? I saw this one and I hoped it would be in.
I'll tell you what, you've given this the big build.
Right.
For Craig, why do you think so many viewers have the opinion that you hate their club when it's abundantly clear that you hate everyone equally?
You're an equal opportunity hater.
I don't hate Frank.
Yeah.
Jack's annoying me tonight. Jack is annoying me tonight a little bit. Try to catch me out with his West Coast stuff. I used to have in my Twitter account, because I don't really bother with Twitter. I tweet a picture of the dog and some people go and start talking tactics and debate and all that. I'm like, get a life. Anyway, at one point in my bio, I put biased against your team, because that's how it seems at times, you know. So this job is not, we're not cheerleaders, right? Not here to talk up somebody who once paid my wages. We're here to do a job. What was the question?
I hate their club, but you still alluded to a former club of yours, which sounds like you hate that club the most.
What do you mean? I don't.
They said that you hate their club, but
Chelsea supporters and Celtic supporters think I hate them. They think I'm bitter. All that is nonsense. Nonsense. It's just the job, right? No preconceived ideas about any game, any commentary. It's just not, just doesn't, it just doesn't happen. Doesn't happen.
Well, there you go. Doesn't hate our club.
I probably do hate your club. I hate most clubs. Particularly clubs that play in games that go to extra time and penalties.
I'll tell you what you won't hate then.
What? At the end
of the show? The show ends here. That's it. We're done. For the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you so much for sending your questions in, especially that last one.
Oh, San Diego.